This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Through this weekend, buy one, get one at EdenPure.com. Use code word Howie Bogo. One word, Howie Bogo.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith. The last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Bill Cosby to be released from prison. The charges have been dropped. This is incredible breaking news that I did not expect. He is set to be a free man after the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court issued an opinion to vacate his conviction. Bill Cosby will walk out of a Pennsylvania state prison a free man. The former comedian had appealed to the court in December when his lawyers argued that Cosby's entire life was put on trial that caused him to suffer prejudice. The Supreme Court agreed to review two aspects of the case that Cosby's lawyers challenged. The first one was the judge's decision to let prosecutors call five other accusers. The other examined Cosby's argument that he had an agreement with a former prosecutor that he'd never be charged. The 83-year-old has been in SCI Phoenix, a state prison outside of Philadelphia, after a jury convicted him in 2018. I remember when they convicted him in 2018. And I remember being pleasantly surprised at the conviction. I didn't think that they were going to actually, you know, say he was guilty. But obviously, I celebrated a bit too soon because now he's walking free, which is really, really crazy. And obviously, all the mainstream news networks are going to run with this all day long, which is understandable. It is breaking news. All right. So my next guest, if we can get him on here, I'm not sure if we're having a little trouble with the phone lines. All right. So we'll wait on that. But he has a great piece out, and it's about this Biden domestic terror strategy and the woke war on wrong think. You might remember wrong think because of 1984 and the Biden administration's first of its kind national strategy for countering domestic terrorism codifies a federal war on wrong think. In sum, the document makes clear that the imposition of wokeism constitute a national security imperative. It's basically just talking about how vague all of this is and how, you know, anytime a Republican questions anything or doesn't agree with the woke left, we are subject to investigations and scrutiny and criticism. And it doesn't seem to go both ways. So if we can get Ben on, that's great. If not, you know, I do want to run with this Cosby stuff. So 844-500-4242. Feel free to weigh in. Is anyone else as surprised as me? I didn't see this one coming. I thought for sure. Actually, one time I was with Howie. We were in New Hampshire for something. And we actually were on the tarmac. And there was Bill Cosby's old private jet was there. It was like this bronzy brown color. And it was after he had been put in prison, but it was eerie to see it there. We'll take calls on this if people want. But now my guest has arrived, Ben Weingarten. Thank you so much for joining us. Ben is the fellow at the Claremont Institute. He's also a senior contributor to The Federalist. Ben, I have to start with the obvious question. What is your reaction to Bill Cosby being released from prison?
Well, he's entering a different world than the one he entered when he was first incarcerated, and I can only imagine how this is going to be treated publicly writ large in the kind of woke climate that we're in. You know, he had committed crimes prior to this, which by any societal standards were reprehensible, completely unacceptable, and essentially washed away an amazing career as one of the funniest people in America and an icon, a symbol of what people ought to have aspired to. And that's all been washed away. And now we enter a society where people like him are not only canceled, but far beyond that. So it's kind of a remarkable and breathtaking thing to see this ruling come down.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. So, Ben, you wrote a piece for Newsweek, and it's about the Biden domestic terror strategy, and I really enjoyed reading it because you talk a little bit about how this federal war on woke think and on wrong think is targeting, you know, a very vague group of people. They don't really specify who they're going after with this national strategy for countering domestic terrorism. Can you tell everybody a little bit about this?
Yeah, it's difficult to unpack, and I'll try to do it as succinctly as I can. But essentially, the Biden administration, after January 6th, sought to use January 6th, the Capitol riot, as the catalyst to argue that essentially Trumpism, but which it describes as, you know, white supremacy or racially motivated violence or militia, right-wing extremists and the like, posed the greatest threat of any group to the homeland. And January 6th was essentially the singular data point that they pointed to. As we know, the narrative about January 6th being an armed right-wing insurrection, a murderous one aimed at overthrowing the republic, that narrative has collapsed in many respects. Julie Kelly has done the best reporting on this of anyone, showing, of course, that first of all, the idea that people were murdered during that riot is a false one, except for Ashley Babbitt being shot by authorities, that no one was armed with a gun on the Capitol grounds during that event, and that most of the charges being filed, the overwhelming amount of them, amount to essentially glorified trumped-up trespassing charges. But even setting all of that aside, the administration, in coming up with this strategy where it's very vague about talking about domestic violent extremists, never talks about the number of people, never identifies specifically the groups they're associated with, their strength, evidence of their actions and the threat that they actually pose. They simply expect us to take at face value what an intelligence community that has proven itself to be political over the last 4+ years and beyond says, in a shorter declassified assessment put out several months ago, that what they claim is the greatest threat to the homeland is the greatest threat to the homeland. And we know it's political because they only talk about, essentially, paraphrasing, right-wing extremism, but they don't look to examples from the left. And even in testimony in Congress, those who support this sort of policy point to numbers which cook the books, essentially, which take as a given that the summer protests of last year, the 1619 riots, as I call them, aren't counted in terms of the events of supposed domestic terrorism, which is violence towards political ends. So it's very clear that if you look at the language in this document, which is vague and ill-defined, and, oh, by the way, also leaves out jihadists as a threat entirely to the homeland, which shows you the charade of this, that this is a political process. And I go through in this article all the really disturbing aspects of what the administration intends to do in connection with the so-called counter-terror effort, which I argue is really an effort to purge wrong thinkers in American society, namely conservatives.
I'm glad you brought up the jihadists, because that to me was the most shocking part of this article. How could any serious apolitical strategy on domestic terror ignore the Islamic supremacists who have killed more Americans than any other group over the last generation? And I guess the way they can do it is that there's a huge portion of our country that just buys into everything they're saying and takes it at face value and doesn't think to question it.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it's so apparent that essentially we know in the general woking of society that we're witnessing that pretty much anything non-progressive is deemed racist and bigoted. And if it's racist and bigoted, if it's ideas that are simply intolerable to the left, if it's dissent from the left, then not only is it racist, bigoted, and evil, but it's potentially violent. You know, for the left, words they don't like are violent, and they're allowed to engage in violence against those who use those words to counter that so-called violence in the paradigm that we're living in today. So when the document literally mentions the fact that it believes that the intelligence community essentially assesses that fake narratives about fraud in the 2020 election will likely lead to domestic violent extremist attacks in America today, that's the perfect representation of a Democrat party, really, that is driving this strategy under the Biden administration, which says that, look, if you support voter integrity laws, that's Jim Crow. If you were a Trump supporter, you are a white supremacist or a white supremacist aider, abettor, and enabler. And if you follow that line of logic through and you say that racism is at the root of most domestic terror or the greatest domestic terrorist threat, then of course you have to purge the country of the racist. And that, of course, is anyone who's not progressive under their paradigm. Or it could be. And they never specified, they never narrow that bound. So you have to assume that they're going to have the most liberal interpretation of who so-called domestic violent extremists are. And I would argue that the January 6th, really the political persecution that we've seen, where literally you have defendants who have never committed a crime in their lives in court, essentially engaging in forced confessionals, saying, I'm sorry about what I thought about the election, Joe Biden's the president, everything that I thought was illegitimate and wrong. And then you have judges and prosecutors making the case that people are literally a threat to the homeland if they have any questions about the election, and just the general people being held in pretrial detention for weeks, non-hardened criminals, essentially in solitary confinement and worse. This demonstrates, plus the massive pervasive effort to pursue all of these people, this reflects what's coming in this domestic counterterrorist paradigm, I fear, based upon the document, and it is manifestly not justice. And let's be very clear, people who act out for illegitimate reasons, period, full stop, ought to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. But this looks much more like a war on wrongthink than a war on actual so-called violent extremists.
Yeah, very well said, Ben. I'm speaking with Ben Weingarten. He's an excellent columnist. He writes for a variety of different publications, including The Federalist, Newsweek, and he's the fellow at the Claremont Institute. Ben, I do have to get your take because I'm familiar with some of your work, and I have a feeling you'll have a strong opinion on this. Jake Tapper offered Ilhan Omar kind of an opportunity on his show last night to walk back some of her comments comparing Israel and the U.S. to Hamas and the Taliban. And I want to play this for you and for my audience and then get your response. This is Cut 11.
Do you understand why some of your fellow House Democrats, especially Jews, find that language anti-Semitic?
I have welcomed any time, you know, my colleagues have asked to have a conversation, to learn from them, for them to learn from me. I think it's really important for these members to realize that they haven't been partners in injustice. They haven't been, you know, equally engaging in seeking justice around the world. And I think, you know, I will continue to do that. It is important for me as someone who knows what it feels like to experience injustice in ways that many of my colleagues don't, to be a voice.
Your reaction, Ben?
Well, of course, her answer is no. She's unrepentant in her anti-Semitism, which is really a proxy for a telltale sign of her broader anti-Americanism that's shared by her fellow anti-American leftists. It's sort of the glue that holds the pro-Islamist and the progressive movement together. And not only is she unrepentant, but then she attacks the people who are critics of her. And she says, well, you're not really committed to justice, and actually you're the ones who are being offensive, and you haven't apologized to me. Ilhan Omar is the ultimate cry bully who uses identity politics as both a cudgel to attack anyone who dares criticize her on the merits, the richly deserved criticism that she gets, and she also uses that as a shield to protect herself from ever being criticized. And this is something that, first of all, the party has to answer for and never answers for. I mean, multiple times they've tried to sort of chide her, criticize her, but they remember, of course, her initial anti-Semitic comments unearthed and made while she was in Congress were met with, first of all, something of a backlash within the party, but then the party caved, and the party essentially said, we're not just going to censure Ilhan Omar's speech, and we're not going to censure it by name either. We're going to censure any offensive speech of any kind ever, so we can use it to attack conservatives, and we can de-emphasize Ilhan Omar's words because it looks really bad for us politically. But the bottom line is that that initial cave showed where the party is, and where the party is that its establishment is deathly afraid of the radical anti-American progressive wing to the party. The fact that you have a President Joe Biden who probably doesn't even know what equity, as it's used in the executive orders that he's put out, means, but is using it to essentially impose an anti-racist so-called agenda on the country. Or if you were to look at the Iran policy, which is basically bending over backwards and kowtowing to the world's leading state sponsor of jihad. The running theme through all of these parties, through all of these policies, through this entire agenda is leftism, and it's represented by someone who is a Democrat establishmentarian par excellence, the ultimate swamp creature, probably with almost no ideological bone in his body in reality, particularly if you look back at his at the historical record of his career. And why is he so far left and trying to put forth the most radical progressive agenda in history? Precisely because the party is kowtowing to people just like Ilhan Omar. People
Ben, I hate to cut you off because I'm fascinated by all your commentary, and I think your piece is awesome, and I'd love to have you on again for hopefully a longer segment. Ben Weingarten, thank you so much for joining the show. I'm going to tweet out all of his work on the other side so you guys can check that out. All right, guys, we'll be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Bill Cosby to be released from prison. We'll be talking to a lawyer about this at 2 o'clock. But first, it's time for Grace's Goodies.
So you're looking for a deal and you want to make it real.
A money-saving deal.
It's Grace's Goodies.
Goody, goody.
Southern Airways Express is a scheduled service commuter airline serving nearly 36 cities across the United States. Specifically for my audience, Southern Airways Express provides service between Hyannis, Nantucket, Norwood, and New Bedford, Mass., as well as Providence, Rhode Island. Joining me now is Mark from Southern Airways Express. Mark, thank you so much for joining the Grace Curley Show.
Hi, Grace. Love your show.
Thank you so much. I love your airplanes. Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
So I've been on your planes before. They're absolutely beautiful. It really is an experience. You know, obviously you're getting from one place to another, but it's really fun, Mark. And you feel very high society when you're flying in these planes.
Well, it's also very cool. Actually, it's 75 degrees in Nantucket today when we're roasting up here in Metro Boston. And it's a great place to beat the heat, especially in July and August when we get a lot of days like today.
Absolutely. Now what we're offering at thegracecurlyshow.com, so you go to gracecurlyshow.com, you click on store. While supplies last, you can purchase a travel voucher valued at $300 for just $150. Mark, what are some popular routes that people are taking right now? I'm assuming a lot of people are going to Nantucket. And what seems to be the area that they're flying out of the most?
Well, we expanded our service this year. We now fly from Norwood, from New Bedford, from Providence, Rhode Island, and also from Bedford, Mass., right off of I-95, which is also convenient from southern New Hampshire and southern Maine. So we have four gateways onto beautiful Nantucket Island daily service.
That is so awesome, and especially for people who don't want to sit in traffic to get all the way to the ferries and then sit on the ferry for another few hours. This just cuts down on everything. You beat the traffic, and you have a good time while you're doing it.
And you're there in 30 minutes, not 4 hours.
Yeah, it's an awesome experience, guys. I highly recommend it. I went this past summer with my fiance, Will. We had the best time. He loves planes, so he could have just gone back and forth, and that would have been enough. But we did spend the entire day in Nantucket and had a really great time. Go to gracecurlyshow.com, click on store, and while supplies last, you can purchase a travel voucher valued at $300, and you're getting it for just $150. This is for beautiful people, guys. Get on this. Thank you, Mark. We'll be right back. It's The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone. Just a quick update. It's been a busy news day. Bill Cosby's conviction has been overturned. He will walk out of prison today a free man. We're going to talk about that at 2 o'clock with a legal expert. That's something I've always that I tend to do when legal issues arise. I go, you know what? I'm going to leave this to the experts because I am not privy to all of the different laws involved here. I did say to Howie, it sounds like it was kind of a fruit of the rotten tree situation where they made some mistakes in prosecuting him. And I have to say, Jared, I felt pretty like a legal eagle saying that, you know?
That is a nice pull. right there.
What can I say? But our actual legal expert is great, and he'll, you know, if you have any questions about the case or any opinions, text them into 63566. Start the text with the word Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y. Trump is at the border right now. He's at the epicenter of the border, and he's speaking live. And I would love to take him, because this show is just, I mean, the material is just pouring in. So let's take former President Donald J. Trump.
And I'd ask him a lot. I'd say, what do you think about this? What do you? I was calling him once every 4 or 5 days to get his advice, because nobody knows. Like, for instance, on the wall, I was going to build a very good precast concrete wall. Would have been really fast. I loved it. I was going to do super hard precast, the 5,000-pound concrete. And the Border Patrol hated it because they wanted to be able to see through. I said, why? And after we go through, then we put the panels on top. And you're all nodding. It's true. The panels on top, it's sort of a safety climb, no climb panel. And that panel adds great difficulty to being able, believe it or not, because a couple of people said, why'd you put the panel on top? And it was really a no climb panel. It's very hard to climb it. Once you get there, then you have the panel on top of everything else. So I did it 100% as per Border Patrol, ICE, and everybody else, in conjunction even with your top people. Mm-hmm. We designed a wall that was terrific. You know, you see it as steel, but it's not really. It's steel on the outside. It's hardened concrete on the inside of the bollards. And then it's also rebar, and it's a very heavy rebar and a very powerful rebar, very strong rebar, steel. So we had steel, concrete, and steel, and when they cut through it, it's... They got to really want to get through. They got to really want to get through.
Now, here's the funny thing about Trump being here, because obviously Kamala Harris visited last week and it was, you know, panned by conservatives and some Democrats as a pretty bad PR disaster. She spent more time at the airport on the tarmac than she did actually visiting, you know, any migrants or migrant children. She wasn't even near anything. I think Howie made the comparison that he had heard somewhere that it's like, it's like you're trying to investigate the subway in New York City, and so you go out to the Hamptons. I mean, there's no real connection. She was there for PR, for optics. And I really enjoyed a piece today in Red State. It's by Joe Cunningham, and it's titled Kamala Harris Has a Big Problem. And the reason Joe Cunningham wrote this is because there's a piece in the New York Times, and it's titled, let me get the exact title here, Dear Kamala Harris, It's a Trap! And it's by a guest columnist for the New York Times. And people started, you know, commenting on this, saying, you guys are basically telling her that, or you're basically saying that because she's expected to do some of these jobs, whether it is the border, where we see Trump now, or, you know, any of the other things, vaccine sites, whatever else she was put in charge of. I think election integrity. She's had a lot of different jobs over the past few months. They're saying that because they're asking her to do these, they're setting her up for failure, which is interesting, because they're also saying, in turn, they're setting her up so that she won't be able to run and beat the next candidate, the Republican candidate, in, let's say, whether it's 2024, however long Joe Biden makes it for. And what conservatives were pointing out was, all right, so if the jobs that she's being given are so hard that she can't do them as vice president, why would we elect her as president? Why would we want her to be president? You know, that would be like me walking around here going, oh, Jared, they're going to make me CEO of Howie Carr Radio Network, so don't make me do anything hard in the next couple weeks, because they'll see how bad I am at my job and maybe they won't promote me. It's like, well, yeah, that's the point of this part of your job, is to figure it out. So Joe Cunningham wrote about this, and it really made me laugh. He said, but in the 5 months since she assumed the role of vice president, Harris has been made extremely visible by the Biden administration. I don't know why I love that sentence so much. She's been made extremely visible, because there's few people, few politicians who would crash and burn as badly as Kamala Harris just by being made visible. Part of being a politician is usually being visible. But in the case of Kamala, she's now actively like hiding behind pillars so that she doesn't associate with all of these catastrophes of the Biden administration. So Cunningham says,
I eat no for breakfast.
And it is proving to be quite the double-edged sword, so much so that some of her fans on the Democratic side of the aisle fear she's been given a pair of concrete shoes and asked to go swimming. On Tuesday, a guest column went live at the New York Times, warning Harris that her job right now is a trap! Exclamation point.
Was the guest columnist a Douglas Emhoff by any chance?
Doug. So this is a little excerpt from the New York Times column. Addressing the root causes of migration is one of several jobs President Biden has handed Ms. Harris, who has no deep expertise with Latin America issues or the decades-long quandary of federal immigration reform. He also asked her to lead the administration's voting rights effort, which are in a filibuster limbo. According to the Times, he has her working on combating vaccine hesitancy and fighting for policing reform too, among other uphill battles. Ms. Harris at this point can't seem to win for trying. She is a historic yet inexperienced vice president who is taking on work that can easily backfire as so many people sit in judgment, with critics sniping, especially right-wing commentators, and allies spinning, like with official statements about success. And all the while, the clock is ticking. Most political observers think that if Biden decides not to run for re-election in 2024, when he will be 81 years old, Ms. Harris most definitely will. He had to know that in choosing her as vice president, he was making her his heir apparent. But based on how things look now, her work as his number two could end up being more of a baggage than a boon. Mr. Biden and his team aren't giving her chances to get some wins. Aww. And more experience. Rather, it's the hardest of the hard stuff. Oh, no. This is so sad. The vice president is given actual work. Harris came into the job after a presidential campaign that floundered so badly all it took was a crusade by the all-but-forgotten Tulsi Gabbard to put it out of its misery. Harris has proved every step of the way that she lacks the charisma to ignite the American people to her party's cause, and Biden ultimately had to start campaigning himself. This is a Grace Curley side note, begrudgingly. I mean, you remember when they trotted him out and there was like four people sitting in lawn chairs with circles drawn around them? Biden was not happy about that. He was like, I thought we picked Kamala so she would go out for me. Now I have to go out? The Times column opines that there are really tough jobs she's been given and they will hurt her chances to carry on Biden's legacy in either 2024 or 2028. And so basically, Joe Cunningham goes on to make the point that, yeah, they might be tough jobs, but if you can't accomplish these tasks, then you might not be up for the toughest job of all. So he starts to go through different vice presidents and the jobs they took on. We remember Vice President Pence was the head of the COVID task force, which, you know, being in charge of the pandemic, that's a pretty tough job. And he says, in fact, the only vice president from Mondale to the present who has done less than Harris would be Dan Quayle. And frankly, it took me a moment to remember that Dan Quayle was a thing that happened in American history. Maybe that's the legacy for Harris. She's doing better than Dan Quayle. Here's the thing. Peter Hassan at Fox News is absolutely right when he says this. If we weren't talking about all these tough jobs being piled on Harris right now, we'd be talking about why the Biden administration doesn't trust her with these responsibilities. The problem isn't the job or jobs she's being asked to do and how tough they are. The problem is that she's not doing them. Maybe her people thought she could skate by for 4 to 8 years until she could run for president, but she is clearly unprepared every time she makes a public appearance. That isn't a task delegation problem. That's a job performance problem. It is interesting to see just how much she's disappointing the Democrats. And Joe Biden isn't helping. I agree. I thought she was going to be able to skate by. And she would have been able to skate by if Biden wasn't so dead set on reversing all of the successful policies by Donald Trump and therefore wreaking havoc across the country. But he came out first day swinging, like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, Keystone Pipeline, see ya. Remain in Mexico, see ya. And then all these problems arise, and he's like, Kamala, you want to get on that? You want to head to the border, maybe? I don't know. Let me know how it goes. I got some cookies and cream and strawberry ice cream to eat. It's crazy how much ineptitude is running the country right now. I mean, these two people, I honestly don't know who's worse, Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. Peter, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Peter.
Look, I don't want to give them any advice because I think they're lunatics, but all Kamala Harris has to do is read off a teleprompter, get a good speechwriter, stick to a good policy speech on whatever issue they're talking about, the border or whatever. Don't laugh like a hyena and just look serious for like 5 minutes.
I know, Peter, but that's too much. You're asking way too much, obviously. Those are the basic things that they could have rooted out in the first, 2 weeks of her, forget being vice president, the first 2 weeks of her running for president. Someone should have pulled her aside and said, hey, you got to stop laughing at serious questions. That's number one. Two, just maybe don't laugh in general. The laugh isn't, your best asset. And three, just read off the teleprompter. But she can't do that. And you know what I noticed, Peter? I'm watching Donald Trump, and he's at this press conference with Greg Abbott, governor of Texas, and he's talking about the border and immigration. And you notice how comfortable he is speaking on this, and he'll get ridiculed, because he always throws in his little self-congratulatory adjectives. It's the best wall, this and that. But that aside, he's very comfortable speaking about these things. And he's very comfortable taking questions from the press. He might get combative with them, but he's never afraid to tell you his opinion. With Kamala Harris, she's truly fearful to get in front of a microphone. And when you look at the times where she has been in front of one, you start to understand why. You have no idea what's going to come out of her mouth. You haven't been to the border. I haven't been to Europe either. It's like, oh yeah, no, now we understand why Democrats are like, it's a trap. Don't do your job. It's a trap. Well, yeah, if you're really bad at your job, then maybe people are going to figure out that you shouldn't be promoted. That's basic stuff. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about Tucker Carlson, a quick update on that. I got to get through some of this sound before I give it over to Howie Carr and he just gets to run through all of it. And also at 2, we will be talking about the Bill Cosby breaking news. Bill Cosby, I'm going to keep saying it because I don't want people to tune in and go, oh, Grace didn't report Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby's conviction has been vacated. He will walk out of prison tonight, a free man. You heard it here first at the Grace Curley Show. We'll be right back. And I want to let you guys know that Eden Pure is bringing back their famous buy one, get one free sale on their most popular product, the Thunderstorm Air Purifier. With over 100,000 sold and counting, the Thunderstorm is sweeping the nation because people everywhere are raving about how well it works to get rid of odors, kill mold and mildew, and to freshen the air. I can speak to the getting rid of odors. We cook a lot in my house. Chicken, steak, it all smells so good when you first cook it, and then 20 minutes later, you're like, ugh, get this smell out of here. So we just turned this sucker on, the Thunderstorm. It's small, it's effective, it's powerful, and the smell is gone within minutes. Jared, I know you love it for your allergies.
Yes, it cleans the air that I breathe. It actually sends out ions, which ionizes the air and creates a super oxygen, which is a fancy science way of saying it purifies the air that you're breathing. For someone like me, it helps with the scratchy throat, the stuffed up nose. All those nasty symptoms for pollen, different things like that. This actually eliminates that, so you're breathing clean air. It's fantastic.
And right now, Eden Pure is offering a BOGO to my listeners this week only. That's right. Buy one, get one free. Pet kitchen, tobacco, and basement smells are gone in no time with the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. I get a lot of questions about this. People say, what was the code? What was the website? Listen up. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and put in code word Grace BOGO. That's EdenPureDeals.com, code word Grace BOGO. Hurry, these will sell out quickly, so don't delay. This offer ends July 4th. Shipping is free. Bruce Poliquin will join us next to talk about ranked choice voting and how smoothly it went in New York City last night. We'll be right back. It's the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Guys, don't forget to go to gracecurlyshow.com, click on store, and get the Grace's Goodies, which is Southern Airways. I've been on these planes. They're beautiful. It's such a fun experience. You're not going to get a better deal anywhere else. This is half off, $300 voucher for just $150. So go to gracecurlyshow.com and click on store. And also, just an update, we will have a lawyer on at 2:05, Mark Salinas, to talk about the Bill Cosby breaking news. He will be a free man. He'll walk away today, walk out of prison, a free man, as his conviction was overturned by a Pennsylvania Supreme Court. We'll have more on that. But now, I am joined by former state treasurer and congressman from Maine's 2nd District, the one and only Bruce Poliquin. Bruce, I'd like to start with this. Would you like to say I told you so?
Hey, Grace. I'll tell you, man, New York City is getting what they wanted, which is this ranked voting, which is a complete fiasco. It no longer deals with one.
Oh, Bruce, your connection's not good. We're going to put you on hold, Bruce, and we'll come right back. If you guys are missing out on what Bruce is saying, let me give you a quick update. New York City elections officials will try again Wednesday. Try again to report preliminary results of the Democratic mayoral primary after a first attempt went wrong. The mayor's race, the first city election to use ranked choice voting, which is why we're having Bruce on. He knows a lot about ranked choice voting, was thrown into chaos after the city's board of elections posted incorrect preliminary vote counts in the Democratic primary and then withdrew them. Incorrect by about 135,000. They did not erase the testing numbers. They released a statement saying that 135,000 ballot images that were in the computer system for testing purposes had never been cleared. And it proved that the board was not equipped to handle the new ranked choice system. A lot of people were, you know, already declaring last night that it went smoothly. It clearly didn't. Bruce, once again, do you feel vindicated by this? You've been talking about ranked choice voting for a long time.
Yeah, I have, Gracie. I'll tell you, it is it's just a fiasco. It's a system, as you know, designed by political activists for political activists to game the system and win close elections. It confuses voters. It's incredibly complicated. It turns away, you know, normal, you know, everyday voters. And you can see what happens in New York. They don't have a clue who won the election, even though one fella, you know, had a big lead on election day. Now it's going to be weeks before they can figure it out. It's just a scam.
And I love how, Bruce, when the Board of Elections puts out their statement, they're using all these words like we're retabulating, we're recalculating, we're cross-referencing. I'm like, you'd think that for these people who are Jimmy Neutrons, they would just figure out 135,000 votes more before they released it. Like, it doesn't seem like rocket science, but they managed to mess everything up in such a, crazy fashion.
What they should have done, Grace, is look right up the road, you know, a couple hundred miles up in Maine, where it was the first time ranked voting was used in a federal election in my race a couple years ago. And on election night, you know, I beat three other liberals by 2,200 votes.
Bruce Poliquin, we're running out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll keep you updated on the ranked choice voting. We'll be right back.